Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe.
A couple of months ago, I talked with Mark Bukavich of the Anti-Defamation League about the threat posed by right-wing extremists in the United States, during which Mark said that the threat should be taken very seriously. Maybe not as great a threat as international Islamic terrorism, but something closer or on par with it. Last week, Peter W. Singer, strategist and senior fellow at New America, sounded the call in an article at Defense One to the national security community to pay attention to right-wing extremism. I'm joined today by Peter to talk about this. So welcome to the Warcast, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you cited the ADL report that found nearly two-thirds of murders last year committed by extremists were committed by right-wing extremists, which was supported by other reports, such as from New America itself and the Southern Poverty Law Center. It's clear people are being killed. But how does this present a threat to the security of the United States?
We have a movement, an ideology that has inspired, as you put it, a massive number of killings. If you want to measure it, it's 71% of the known politically or religiously inspired killings by extremists in our country. That doesn't even include the most recent potential example, the massacre in Parkland. Those datas don't kill it. It's something that's not just taken place inside the United States. It's hit a number of our allies. We see transnational connections between this group. We also see, unfortunately, foreign powers like Russia trying to stoke it even further. So much like Islamic extremism, which has both global and domestic aspects of it in terms of its reach and in terms of the attacks, the killings, and the like, this type of extremism has the same thing. And yet, what I was troubled by was we in the national security community just can't bring ourselves to talk about it. And I wanted to, you know, explore why was that?
So you do make this point in your article that there are a number of reasons why scholars specifically would stray away from focusing on right-wing extremist violence. Could you expound upon that argument?
Sure. I think it's a couple of things as to why we're having a hard time acknowledging the deadly threat from clusters of groups that gather under the hateful flags of white nationalism, white supremacy, anti-government militia, neo-Nazism. Ironically, one of them is we're trying to appear non-partisan. We're trying to appear unbiased, even though we're talking about a group that justifies, it's so biased that it's justifying hating and killing their fellow Americans. And the result of that is not just that we avoid talking about it, we sometimes even bend over backward to talk about the opposite. So a good illustration of this would be after the Charlottesville incidents, which culminated in the killing of a young woman, more U.S. Newspapers, they ran more op-eds condemning the counter-protesters who've yet to commit a mass killing than those who had not only committed that killing, but all these other ones around the nation. I think another part of it is in terms of calculation. You know, when we think about the topics in our field and the cost versus gain equations of them that shape our choices, they're just very different. You know, compare the professional benefits that would come to publishing an article, creating a college course, writing a book or a dissertation, creating a university or think tank program, funding a foundation program, any one of these to do so on far-right extremism versus pretty much any other topic in the field, but particularly certain aspects of extremism like Islamic extremism. It's not just that there's not as much, you know, professional organizational profit in it. It's that to do so would create far more headaches for us and our bosses than, you know, a topic on any other aspect of our field. And again, I think that's really odd when you think about we're talking about a problem that essentially has killed more Americans over the last few years than any other aspect, any other, you know, kind of national security issue that we wrestle with. It's the same thing outside of academia. It's the same thing within government. And we know this from specific examples that have played out in recent years. We know that to talk about this topic comes with very clear political and professional risks, to the point that we have even seen people in government lose their jobs for trying to point out and talk about this problem. And that was before we had, you know, the situation right now of a commander in chief who these groups have literally celebrated. And so you have this, you know, strangeness in our American politics that to talk about terrorism, to talk about extremism is politically savvy, except this part of it. And then there's a final aspect of it, which is, you know, basically, again, strange, weird, ironic, however you want to paint it. This is one of the areas that different from other aspects of security studies, where it invites personal risks, harassment, annoyances. And again, that ranges from the online side via social networks that have become basically a breeding ground for this kind of hate, to physical stalking and violence. And you don't see that on so many other areas of security studies, and yet you see it on this space. And so for these, you know, variety of reasons, we're just having a really tough time talking about this problem. And my point was, like a lot of other articles, I'm written out of both an interest and a sense of frustration and saying, hey, fellow national security professionals, we have to get over this. This is a problem that is killing our fellow Americans. We have to be willing to talk about it. And to avoid talking about it is to enable it further.
I'd like to dip a little bit more into this, like, whataboutism, because I think that's, I would suggest, and you mentioned it in your article, that that's very much at the root of why this is not as widely studied as other forms of extremism. And there was a response to your piece in Defense One. And to a large extent, it seems to me that this article, this response sort of portrayed it that there are individuals say, well, it's right-wing extremism. I'm on the right side of the political spectrum. So what this is doing is this is picking on me. But I think that it's pretty clear that there are different types of politics involved here. We have mainstream right wing versus extremist right wing. Now, is there any way that the national security community can approach trying to dissociate, at least in the minds of the mainstream right wing, that talking about right wing extremists is not talking about the right wing as a whole?
I complete agreement. I mean, that's absurd to try and if you want to embrace the far right as opposed to saying no. They are beyond the pale. They are not part of our political beliefs. That's what I want. And again, let's pull back here. It illustrates the point that to talk about this topic, we have to deal with the whataboutism in a way that we wouldn't if you and I were talking about Islamic extremism or a group like ISIS. We wouldn't have to sort of pull back and justify why we're talking about them. In turn, there's no need to engage in the whataboutism. Far left violence is bad. See how easy it was to say that? There's no need to caveat violent extremists of any flag as, you know, very fine people. The point is you can condemn violent extremists of whatever flag and say, look, we have a problem here. Now, if we want to go by the numbers, and part of what I was getting at here is we have a clearly significant problem with far-right extremism. By one study, as I mentioned, 71% of the extremist killings inside the United States over the last decade have been by right-wing extremists, 26% by Islamic extremists, 3% by far-left groups. All of those are bad. I'm saying, though, we particularly need to deal with this large set of it, and a large set that, and most importantly, keeps engaging in mass killings. And if we were talking about other organizations, repeated lone wolf attacks. Now, some people want to then go, well, but, you know, I don't like the source of that data. The figures that you use count number of people killed. That's from the ADL. That's fine. If you don't like that data, let's use different data. Let's look at data, for example, assembled by where I work, New America, but it's not us creating the data. It's actually from U.S. government sources, which drew on the statements of law enforcement in determining motivations for various attacks. And in those, they found that attacks by right-wing extremists over this period of time outnumber those by left-wing groups 17 to 1. okay, you say, yeah, yeah, well, I don't like that because you're measuring attacks or, maybe you're looking at a larger set of time. Okay, let's go to a different source. Let's go to the Southern Poverty Law Center, which examined, and particularly the lone wolf online aspects of this, which again, we'd be comfortable talking about related to ISIS, but we don't for whatever reason on this side. In that study, it found since the rise of the so-called alt-right in 2014, it's documented 43 people killed, 60 injured by young men whose social media use evidences a similar ideology. And again, these numbers that I'm citing do not include the recent killings of school students and teachers at Parkland, which appears to fit that same pattern. And again, notice, so we had a shooter, a mass killer, that reportedly put swastikas on his gun and also engaged in right-wing extremist sentiments online. If that shooter had put an ISIS flag on their gun and had engaged in radical Islamist statements online, we would have been perfectly comfortable talking about it. And when I say we, I mean not only national security professionals, but most definitely the US government and the media. So simply put, we're treating it differently because of the symbol, even though the outcome is the same.
I was talking with a friend yesterday about the world of terrorism studies writ large. And, the question was how many terrorism experts were there in the United States on September 10th, 2001? And the answer was, less than 20. Right. And then how many were there on September 13th? And the answer is thousands. And there was this moment, this watershed moment. I don't think it was just the moment and the event itself and the reaction to the event, but there was also an influx of money and funding to support these types of studies from the government, from other sources. Even though the bombing in Oklahoma City in 1996 didn't seem to be enough to sort of, propagate such a cottage industry, looking at it, right-wing extremism, extremist violence, what is it going to take to garner the attention of the national security community? And I think it's probably safe to assume that the U.S. government isn't going to be financially involved to create those sorts of incentives.
Gosh, you touched on so many important issues there. The first is, this aspect of our overall field. Where I came at this problem was, ask any of us who work in national security, not just on terrorism, but, across the field, what should we do about a group like ISIS? We have ideas. We'd probably try and pitch you something related, why you ought to do something on climate change because it helps fuel extremism like ISIS. We'd find ways to link it in. We'd have ideas of what to do. And the reason is because we've literally been swimming in a sea of, articles on sites like War on the Rocks, op-eds, books, congressional hearings, university and think tank programs, foundation grants. I mean, there's just this overall swirl on the topic, and yet there's not on this other one where it is an ideology, a group that's actually killed more Americans than ISIS has pulled off in the last 10 years. And again, notice I'm not saying it's not worthy to talk about ISIS. I'm not engaging in some kind of like, hey, what? Are you saying that all lives don't matter? No, I'm saying, we've dealt with one and we're not dealing with the other. So then you get to, okay, what is it going to take? It's going to take a lot of things. The first is what I was after is let's be willing to talk about it. Let's be willing to talk about it in a way that, says, hey, it's actually not partisan to talk about it. It's, to avoid talking about it is to be partisan. And as we're able to talk about it, it also opens up space for us to go after the kinds of programming and activities which will help us better understand it and in turn create, actually projects and programs and policy to go after this phenomena, much in the same way we've tried to go after other forms of extremism. And again, I think what is interesting about this is how much of this is an American phenomena. The head of counterterrorism policing in the UK just last week openly took credit, said, you know, we've broken up four planned far-right terrorist attacks in just the last year, and said, you know, these groups on the far right that had planned these terrorist attacks are just like a group like ISIS, and that, here's their quote, they create intolerance, they exploit grievances, they try and generate distrust of state institutions. He's able to talk about it. Why are our officials not able to talk about it?
So what's been the reaction to the piece?
It's really been remarkable, and it's fallen, I'd say, into three categories. The first is people in our field saying, you know, yes, this resonated with me. I'm glad someone wrote it. It's a little bit odd, though. Several people have said, you know, that was brave of you to write. I'm like, you know, that kind of illustrates the point. It shouldn't be viewed that way. You know, thank you, but it shouldn't be viewed that way. The second has been incredibly sad. People reaching out who've had family members hurt or killed by these groups and saying, hey, you know, this happened, but it wasn't in the data sets that you're mentioning. The problem's actually much bigger. And that points to, again, an issue in how we study and talk about how we prosecute these groups, is that we often frame it within criminal behavior, even though it has a political extremism aspect to it. And then the third has been from people that basically illustrate the point, you know, the people who are filled with hate and want to push back. And you know, it's disgusting, and all they've done is prove why that type of politics has no place in the United States, and why people like myself are so disturbed by it making its presence felt, not just in terms of spurring violence, but being allowed back into mainstream discourse. And you know what, that's It's part of what writing on this topic now means. And even though I'm not someone in specialized on this topic, it helped motivate me.